When I was a kid, I noticed how when I entered a room, certain older relatives would leave. Some left with an apologetic smile, some with a glare, and some refusing eye contact altogether. I wasn't sure what I was doing wrong, but I eventually concluded I brought more into the room than I was aware of, as if tin cans had been tied to my ankles, making a clatter audible to everyone but me. Most kids have such experiences, but as I grew up through high school, college, and into adulthood, I kept having them, and so I considered what those tin cans might be. My loud nasal voice, the way emotion can broadcast out of my face with high volume enthusiasm or disdain, the way my imposter syndrome shows up as a need for approval. And perhaps most of all, my self-consciousness about all of this. I tried to identify and muffle these cans, but as one of my closest friends told me, "You're just a really weird guy who wants to be normal." I envied this friend and socially confident people like him. I resigned myself to the fact I'd always be a little bit off. Then came an important realization. Even the most socially confident people have their own tin cans. Even the friend who labeled me a weird guy who wants to be normal, one of his tin cans is his loud fascination with everyone else's quirks. Things crystallized for me one night as I watched the local news. After a report about some local eccentric, I watched the anchor team shake their heads in that derisively amused local news anchor way. "Okay." In that moment, I saw how their presentation strove for perfect normality, something that airbrushed away all traces of anything unusual. Aha, I thought, the fetishizing of being normal. That's the weirdest thing of all. I wouldn't say this moment freed me from worrying about my tin cans, but it gave me permission to understand my tin cans as signs of my humanity. One setting in which I always felt less self-conscious about my quirks has been church, starting with the Episcopal Church I attended with my mother and sister. There, people seemed to enjoy me, sometimes even want more of me, even when I dressed up in acolyte garb and swung the thurible and smoky 360s. Adults would talk to me, laugh at my jokes, and ask me about my life. After a while, I realized some of these people had odd traits of their own. Some of them rolled their R's when singing the word Christ. Christ! Some of them spoke with their mouths full, and when they cornered me during coffee hour, I stared at the mashed muffins in their teeth and gums as they spoke endlessly about the history of the English monarchy. Many of them appeared awkwardly self-aware, something I feared everyone noticed about me. Maybe church is a haven for all of us who don't fit in elsewhere, I thought. Since then, I've been a part of communities where people speak in tongues, where Renaissance fair fanatics exult in liturgical dance, and where people do all sorts of things that might make a local news anchor team smirk and say, "Okay." One of the best things church can offer is welcome and affirmation for our whole selves, even the parts of us that follow from beyond our awareness. I so appreciate that. And yet, the security I find at church comes at a cost, because I'm an introvert. Being an introvert doesn't mean I dislike people or don't get lonely. It means that I have to take people in measured doses. And church often delivers a wallop. Before church, I ready myself for all of the interaction, because while I also look forward to the interaction, it tires me out. For me, dinner church is both fun but exhausting. Easter vigils are spectacular but also overwhelming. When a church retreat is announced, I can feel my batteries drain. We're going to travel together, cook together, eat together, sing together, share stories together, play some really fun games together where we get to know each other, share bedrooms and bathrooms, and don't worry, we'll have some quiet time as we walk a labyrinth. Together. At the same time, I know the very things that drain my batteries provide a charge for others. Some of us not only thrive on interaction, we need a lot of it. Just as I have to brace myself for church, even when I look forward to it, someone else may come to church relieved that their batteries are about to be charged. Interaction feeds them. There are ambiverts, whose settings are somewhat in the middle, omniverts, who alternate from really extroverted to really introverted, and others of us for whom none of these terms fit. Peace be with you. Some of us prefer a hug, others a handshake, some merely a wave. And also with you. Some of us savor the quiet of Lent, others of us can't wait for the fireworks of Easter. Some of us prefer the festive warmth of Advent, and some of us need the barren coldness of Good Friday. Some of us might enjoy all of these things, while there may be others of us for whom none of it feels easy. Paul encourages the church in Corinth to be in agreement that there be no divisions among you, but that you be knit together in the same mind and the same purpose. It's tempting to hear this as an appeal for uniformity, a condemnation of difference, an exaltation of some happy meeting place in the middle. There's a way in which this might lead us to create a space that is the local news anchor of church spaces, something so airbrushed towards a non-existent norm that none of us could possibly feel welcome. But it's possible to look for a different kind of agreement. For instance, maybe we could agree on these statements. Whether we know it or not, each of us brings more than we know through the door. The things we don't know about ourselves aren't necessarily tin cans. They might be wind chimes. We can hold a loving curiosity about our tin cans and wind chimes, and about everyone else's, too. Sometimes my tin cans and wind chimes get tangled up with yours, and one or more of us trips. Our discomfort and our difficulty with ourselves and with each other provide opportunities for learning and growth. Passover celebrants leave an empty chair in case the prophet Elijah shows up. I love this tradition because it asks us to imagine the space someone else might need. It invites me to imagine who Elijah might be, perhaps even imagine the parts of him that elude his own awareness. Would he burst in with a big prophetic personality and propensity to talk, talk, talk? Would he slip in, withdrawn, eating and drinking in silence, and then departing without goodbye, leaving everyone to wonder if he was offended or if he'll be back? The thought of leaving room for Elijah allows me to remember how my introversion and the way it shows up at church is simply one of my tin cans, or maybe a wind chime. It would be no different if I were extroverted, ambiverted, omniverted, or anything else. When I come to church, you encounter aspects of me that elude my awareness, and it's true for all of us. Each time we gather is an opportunity to imagine what we can observe about ourselves and each other, hold all of it with love, and make room for it at the table.